Blog Talk Radio.
Get access to this, Jackson.
His lawyers say they can get me in posing as a legal investigator.
You were Huey Newton's lawyer.
Yes.
And now, Mr. Jackson.
Mr. Jackson was sentenced 1 year to life for a $70 gas station robbery.
We have 2 hours.
Waiting a long time.
We need brothers who can maintain their self-respect in here, have true strength.
Some people are comparing you to Eldridge Cleaver, Richard Wright, Du Bois. How does your fame affect you when you're locked up all day?
Free the Soledad Brothers!
Free the Soledad Brothers!
Do you understand that there cannot be a peaceful revolution?
Okay, gentlemen, we're taking over!
Mr. Jackson, sorry about your brother.
They will live to regret it. I'll see you today.
Yeah, starring Gary Dordan from TVCSI.
This is the military, David.
Real land. Real still do. Welcome to another edition of Georgia University Radio. I'm your host, Umar Shakir, where our goals are fivefold. Our first goal is to eradicate functional literacy among new African prisoners. Our second goal to eradicate culture ignorance among new African prisoners. Our third goal is to transfer the criminal mentality to the new African mentality. Our fourth goal is to assist in the rebuilding and stabilization of the new African community. Our fourth goal is, fifth goal is to prepare new African prisoners for release, reduce new African recidivism. And our overall goal is transferring the whole entire prison-industrial slave complex within the prison system to get institutional learning via educational means. In conjunction with that, once the brothers and sisters are transformed, once they come to the street, that they are able to contribute to the building institution and program that will fill a new African need. Before I bring in our guest tonight, I'd like to go over a couple of events. I'll go over a few events that happened in history during this week. Okay. On October the 8th, 1775, a council of general officers decided to bar slaves and free new Africans from the Continental Army. In 1901, the Harlem branch of the YMCA was established. Department in Birmingham, Alabama, council an interracial baseball game organized by Jackie Robinson, citing a city ordinance against mixed athletics. In 1969, police officers and new Africans exchanged sniper fire on Chicago West Side. One youth was killed and nine policemen were injured. October the 9th, 1806, mathematician Benjamin Banneker died at Elliott Mill, Maryland at the age of 74. In 1869, Morgan State College was opening. In 1893, a white mob attacks a new African couple in Wheatley County, Tennessee, lynching Bob Hudson and brutally beating his wife. In 1895, Eugene Ballard, first new African combat pilot and only new African pilot in World War I, was born. In 1940, the White House released a statement which said that government policy is not to intermingle color and white personnel in the same regimental organization. In 1962, Uganda gained its independence. It wasn't long ago. In 1967, Che Guevara killed in Bolivia. Also, October the 9th is Indigenous Peoples Day. Okay, October the 10th, 1871, activist Octavius Cato and two other new African men killed after voting in Philadelphia. 1927, Hazel Johnson Brown, the first female new African Army general, was born. In 1933, California cotton growers trying to break a strike killed a Mexican diplomat and two farm workers. In 1935, Porgy and Bess opened at Alvin Theater on Broadway with Todd Duncan and Annie Brown in the leading roles. In 1961, Hoda N. Smith was appointed to Michigan Supreme Court. 1978, Congressman Ralph H. McHale, politician and former Olympic track star, died in Chicago at the age of 68. In 1987, Jesse Jackson Sr. announced that he would make a second run for the presidency. In 1999, Wilt Chamberlain, NBA legend, died in L.A. at age of 63. In 2008, Jericho Amnesty had its 10th anniversary national march at the UN. Also, on October 10th, Cuban Independence Day. October 11th, which is today's date, Alexander Miles patent automatic opening and closing elevator doors. 1921. Police in Texas shoot and kill David Bunn and handcuff new African man as he flees a white lynch mob. 1939, the NAACP Legal Defense and Education Fund Incorporated as a separate organization with Thurgood Marshall as director. In 1972, a prison uprising took place in Washington, D.C. jail. 1991, comedian Red Fox to create the role of Fred Sanford in the TV hit Sanford's son died of a heart attack on the set of the TV series The Royal Family in Los Angeles. In 1864, October the 12th, from the 12th to the 13th in Maryland, voters adopted a new constitution that prohibited slavery. In 1908, Ann Petrie, whose book The Street sold over 1 million copies, was born. In 1932, Dick Gregory, who's an advocate for civil and human rights, health issues, counter-depression, and the status quo, were born. In 1945, Jesse James Payne was lynched in Madison County, Florida. 1970, U.S. Commission on Civil Rights said there was a major breakdown in the enforcement of civil rights legislation. In 1972, from the 12th to the 13th, 46 new African and white sailors injured in a race riot on an aircraft carrier, Kitty Hawk, off North Vietnam. In 1995, five police officers in suburban Pittsburgh killed new African motorist, Johnny Gamet, during a routine traffic stop by pinning his face down on the pavement until he escalated. The same thing they did to George Floyd. October 13, 1831, Joe Anderson, a slave, helped invent the grain harvester reaper. 1913, Meharry Medical College was founded. 1920, a white mob terrorized new African residents in Roxbury, North Carolina, forcing them to leave town. 1926, Jesse L. Brown, the first new African aviator in U.S. Naval born. In 1970, Angela Day was arrested in New York City and charged with unlawful flight to avoid prosecution for alleged role in a California courtroom shootout, which is the Mary County Court kind of shootout would happen August 7, 1970, with Comrade Johnny Jackson. In 1980, an unprovoked slaying of six new Africans in Buffalo, New York, took a demand for national investigation. October 14, 1864, the first African-American daily newspaper, the New African Tribune, was published in English and French. Still exists today as a monthly news magazine. In 1964, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. received Nobel Peace Prize. 1971, from the 14th to the 23rd, two were killed in Memphis racial disturbance. 1982, declaring drugs a threat to national security, President Ronald Reagan doubled down on the Nixon administration war on drugs and called for new laws to impose prison sentences for drug use. Those were events that happened in history during this week, plus there were many more. Those were just some. That I felt were relevant, and I just wanted to expose and put out there. First, I'd like to thank everybody for joining our broadcast, who've been supporting us in 2014 on Georgia University Radio. I thank everybody, including everybody who currently educating themselves in every community they exist in. And I thank you for doing the work. And also that, we have various political prisoners, POWs, that need support behind enemy lines. So you reach out to them as much as possible, develop a relationship with them, support them, push their campaign. Even if you have even any loved ones that are incarcerated behind enemy lines, support them as well. Support them as well. That's your duty. Now, also, I'd like to mention that Georgia University has a Facebook page, a Twitter page, an Instagram page under the name Georgia University. We also have a website where you can go in and find more information about Georgia University, our program, institution, things that we do. Site www.georgejacksonuniversity.gdu.com. Hold on. We're still waiting on the guests to come on. He hasn't came on yet. Hold on. Let me see something. See something right quick. How you doing, Elder Billy Zinni? How you doing, bro?
Hey, I'm doing well. How about yourself?
I'm doing strong, man. You know, for the people that don't know who you are, tell the people about a little bit about your background, who you are, so they know exactly who's speaking.
You know, I can barely hear you.
Okay. Hold up. What about
you? Not too much better, but okay.
Okay. Tell a little bit about your background, who you are, who's speaking.
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay. I was saying, tell the people about who you are so they can know who's speaking.
This is Billy X. Jennings, a former member of the Black Panther Party, archivist for Black Panther Party.
Okay. For people that don't know, tell the people about your organization, It's About Time, and what exactly It's About Time does.
Well, It's About Time is the Black Panther Party Alumni Committee. We came together in 1995 to celebrate our 30th year anniversary. And since that, in 1996, when the 30s was held in Oakland, people were, just like Fred Hampton used to say, was high. They got high on the struggle, and they wanted to keep the formation that we had started together. So from 1996 to this very day, It's About Time has been educating people about the legacy of the party. We put together a website in 1998 that has over a million viewers from around the world. Every 5 years we give a big reunion, and in between that, we have a yearly, every October we have Black Panther History Month, in which we have activities around our legacy of our party. Also, we have a traveling photo exhibit that travels the world, to Australia, to Africa, to the UK, to Portugal, to Ireland. It's been around the world. So we rally all party members and to appreciate our legacy by participating in events in your area, you know. So we have a big list of Panthers. We celebrate our fallen comrades. We have formed committees to support some of the political prisoners. Now, some of the committees we've worked on, we've been working on Mumia's case for 30 years, getting him support, writing him, and so forth. We started the Angola 3 committee with Malik Rahim down in New Orleans, and we were able to free Albert and Herman, and Robert got out, I think, 2005. So we've been pretty active. Like I said, this website that we have pulls in a lot of people, a lot of students, people doing dissertations, HBO, Showtime, VH1, they use us as a source of information. Whenever someone writes, we have a big archive, a very, very large archive of Panther papers, photographs, posters from the 60s and 70s. So people use our resources to do research and find out more about the party. We do a lot of high school and college speaking engagement, as well as we have a Black Panther Party history tour that we do in Oakland on demand. So, we're pretty active. And this month alone, we have 5 events. One of the events that we have is at Laney College, the college I went to. At the time, there was two J.C. colleges in Oakland. One was Laney College, which I went to, and Merritt College, which Bobby and Huey P. Newton went to, where they founded the Black Panther Party. So I have an exhibit at Laney College. Last week, we had an exhibit called Sister Love, and it was to honor the women in the party. We had a lot of photographs. We had a panel full of women talking about their experiences in the party and what they're doing today. Tomorrow, we open up another exhibit in Sacramento, California, around the party's legacy. And then on Saturday, we're participating in this festival called Life is Living, an arts festival that's given every October. You know, 7,000-8,000 people come to this event. And we have exhibits there. We have a breakfast program that starts out the whole festival. Last year, we fed 935 people, free breakfast from 10 o'clock to 12. So this year, we're going to be honoring fallen comrades, because within the last 6 to 8 months, there's a lot of revolutionary brothers that was in the Black Panther Party has passed on, as well as some sisters. So this year we're going to honor our fallen comrades that life is living. Then the next day on October 15th, we're going to be at the Huey P. Newton Center, opening up another exhibit called Revolutionary Grain. And it's the photographs of Panthers in the now, you know, what we're doing now, what we look like now. And so that exhibit is opens up Sunday. And then after that, they have a Panther Fest that's sponsored by the Huey P. Newton Foundation. And it's an all-day festival of music. I think they're going to have three stages of music, speakers, stuff for the whole family. So there's a lot of – oh, also Emory Douglas has an exhibit at Marin College across the bay, across the bridge from San Francisco. His exhibit opening October 5th, and he's going to speak October 26th. So there's a lot of events happening during Black Panther History Month.
For the people who don't know, who exactly is Emory Douglas? The people who don't know, and ones who listen in the future.
Who is Emory Douglas?
I said, who is Emory Douglas?
Emory Douglas is the Minister of Culture of the Black Panther Party. He's a revolutionary artist. If you ever seen a Black Panther Party newspaper, he's the one who draws most of the images on the back cover and also in the Black Panther Party newspaper. So he was our major artist, and he's still cranking out revolutionary images today. So he was a Central Committee member along with Bobby, Huey, Eldridge, Kathleen, and he joined the party right after it started. So he's still out in the community drawing and talking about the party and the struggle.
Okay. I appreciate that. In regards to your history, right, what actually inspired you to join the Black Panther Party? And when did you join the Black Panther Party?
Well, I joined the party in 1968, straight out of high school. I was going to summer school at Laney College. And from Laney College, it's maybe two blocks away from the Alameda County Courthouse. So when I was attending class, my criminology class from 11 o'clock to 11:50, around 11:30 I start hearing these chants. You know, at first it was a faint chant, and then over a period of time they got louder and louder, and they were saying, "Free Huey off the pig, free Huey off the pig." And so after class, me and my partner bounced out of class, and we followed the chanting, and it was the Panthers on the Alameda County Courthouse. It was the first day of Huey's trial, you know. And when I graduated from high school, my English teacher gave me a book as a present, right, and the book was the autobiography of Malcolm X. So I'm reading that book, and I attend the first rally on the first day, and they were talking about the same thing Malcolm was talking about. So I got interested, started attending some rallies, and when they opened up the Panther office on 73rd and East 14th in East Oakland, I went and joined. And what made me join was, as I was going to Laney College, I had the opportunity to take a black history class, which I didn't know very much about black history, and that opened up my mind, along with reading the book on autobiography on Malcolm X. And so I joined the party and became a Panther in training. Back in those days, when you joined the party, you had to go through a 6-week or 8-week training period, and that entails attending political education classes. They have a reading list of 35 books. You have to read books by Fanon. You had to read books by Du Bois, The Red Book by Chairman Mao, books by Fidel, Che Guevara, books from Africa, the destruction of African civilization. There was a lot of books on that list, and you had to at least start reading it or know something about them, because you will be questioned on. Then also, when you're in Panther in training, you learn gun safety, and you go to the range to learn marksmanship and how to operate your weapon. And when you first join the party, it's required that you have a gun, a piece, because during that time, we were called Black Panther Party for self-defense. Later on, we changed, we dropped the self-defense off and became the Black Panther Party. But self-defense was definitely part of being a Panther, learning military skills and so forth, working in the community every day, selling the Black Panther Party newspaper, attending political education class, and just being that new being, that new person in the community, you know, with the information and the ideas to move people forward. Later on, we start developing programs like the Breakfast Program. That was gigantic when we started that, because when we started the Breakfast Program in Oakland, it went across the country like wildfire. It was so successful that Bobby Seale made every Panther office start Breakfast Programs. And at that time, we might have had like 40 offices of the Black Panther Party. So within a week, the Breakfast Program becomes a national program. So we're feeding like 10,000 kids a week, you know, and it's growing more and more. And so that feeling alone that I was helping change come about made me stay in the party, because I could see our work taking hold in the community. We were young kids who we were feeding, political education classes. We were working with BSU, Black Student Unions at that time. That was a big thing, Black Student Unions, and we were working with high school and college students to get ethnic studies and black history classes in high schools in Oakland, California, and across the country. So those are just some of the things that made me join the party, you know, and the fact that they talked about great things they wanted to do for the community in the future. I can barely hear you.
I said, true indeed. Okay. Can you tell us exactly what does survival program Penny Revolution mean? What does that mean?
Well, you coined the idea. He got that idea from Che Guevara. Che Guevara was trying to educate and organize people in Bolivia, but they wasn't interested in politics so much, so he created these programs that people had interest in, right? And the program was to get people involved and take, you know, I think he started a soccer club or something like that, and through the soccer club, they started talking about politics and land ownership and stuff like that. So Huey brought that to the community and to the party by saying, what we're going to have is survival programs pending revolution. That revolution is an ongoing process, and during this process, we don't have liberated territory or anything like that, but we are going to make people conscious, right? So we started these programs with the purpose of lifting people's consciousness and also providing a program for people to participate in the struggle. Because once we started the Breakfast Program and Liberation Schools, teachers like Maya Angelou started donating their time to the party because they saw what we were doing. So the programs were set up for people to raise people's consciousness until there is such time that people are free, you know. So also Huey teaches that the revolution is a process. So at first people thought revolution was going to be overnight or it's going to happen next week, but, you know, we learned that revolution is a process. So during this process of people being re-educated, we have these programs for people to survive on, you know, the Breakfast Program, food program, the Senior Citizen Escort Program, so many programs the party developed. So programs were not permanent programs. They were to hold us over until the struggle came about, you know.
You mentioned the Free Breakfast Program, right? What exactly was the purpose for the Free Breakfast Program? What the purpose was for the creation?
Well, in well, you got to go back to 1967, 1968. The then government, President Johnson, when he was president, the government was into sending rockets to the moon, right, and so forth. So the purpose, and so they had poverty programs set up supposedly to help black people, but they wasn't. They were inefficient and didn't serve the community. So the breakfast program started because there was youth in the black community in Oakland that was fainting and falling out at school for lack of food. They were hungry. And the city took a position, well, we'll take that individual back home so they can get some food. Well, the thing is that if they had food at the house, they would have ate it before they came to the school. So obviously there's no food at home, right? So we took the initiative and said, we will feed our own kids because, as you know, as a student yourself, when you don't have the proper nutrition or nourishment in your body, your mind is wandering. Where is the next meal coming from? So when you're in school, you're going to miss half the lesson because you're distracted, right? Because the hunger will distract you. So our purpose was to feed our kids so they can have a nutritional breakfast in the morning and so they can go to school ready to learn.
Yes, sir. I appreciate that. Okay. Also, in regards to that, was there any kind of education material being passed out at the free bread program, or was it just the purpose of feeding the students?
Mostly just feeding the kids, right? Okay, because most of the breakfast programs were in neighborhoods that we were already in. And some of the kids not only attended the breakfast program, some of them sold the Black Panther Party newspaper, because during that time, the Panther paper came out weekly, and it sold for a quarter. And so in our community, many families don't give kids allowances, or kids don't get allowances. But so selling the Panther paper, each paper you sell, you can keep a dime. So if you sell 25 papers, that's $2.50 of 1968 money, you know, and that was a lot, you know, for a young kid. So selling the Panther paper was a way for them to earn money and stay, put money in the pocket. Also, some of those kids attended the breakfast program. We knew who they were. So it was a way for them to help us and also help themselves, you know. But we had political education classes for the community once a week. So even though Panthers had their own political education classes, we had classes for the community. We read from the Black Panther Party newspaper. We read from books from our reading list. Read Fanon's book. We talked to a lot of students on campus. So we went to a lot of colleges and had political education classes. Many of the original Panthers were part of the San Francisco state strike in 1968, which as a result of them striking, they create a Department of Ethnic Studies was created. And the Ethnic Studies Department was so effective that it went across the country like wildfire. So once it started in San Francisco, it went across to every major college in America that had multicultural people there, right? So those are things that people learn from the party, but they may not know any party members. They're benefiting from that. Just like today, the breakfast program is in every city, right? And every school has a breakfast program, but many of those young kids don't know the Black Panther Party started that. And many of those students that went to school later on until the day who have ethnic study classes don't know the Black Panther Party played an instrumental part in that. Just like today don't realize that the Black Panther Party played a leading role and the decision in the Disability Act of 1977. You know, a lot of people don't know the Black Panther Party started the first senior escort program because our seniors were being beat and robbed and assaulted at the beginning of the month. So we started an escort service, picking people up in vans, taking them to get their checks cashed, and bringing them back, taking them to the store and bringing them back to their home or satellite home.
Interesting. Could you tell us about the Oakland Learning Center? What exactly was that?
Well, the Oakland Community Center was a party ball. It used to be a Catholic school, and it had like an auditorium. It was a built-in school, right? It had something like 20 classrooms, cafeteria. So in 1973, we had, okay, prior to the Oakland Community School, we had been educating young people through a method called Liberation School. So we had Liberation Schools going for parents and kids as well as people in the community, teaching them basic Black history, taking them on field trips out of the community because a lot of people just confined to the community. So the Oakland Community School started from the Liberation School, and we were able to buy this piece of property that eventually became the Oakland Community Learning Center. And from there, all the youth, the parents of youth and kids from the community, I think we had a daily attendance of 200 kids, and then we had a big waiting list. But what was effective about the Oakland Community School is that even though you might have went to a regular school, we had after-school activities. If you wanted to learn how to play an instrument, if you want to learn arts and crafts, if you want to learn martial arts, if you wanted to learn modern dance, we had those classes available for people in the community at no charge. So Oakland Community School was an oasis in the Black community for people in the community. I mean, it got to the point that Laney College and the Oakland Community School joined forces. Now, Laney College in Oakland is near downtown, like 4th Avenue, and our school was on 64th, right? And so people living in East Oakland runs from 1st Avenue to 105th, so it's pretty big. But we're right in the middle, so when we started having college classes, you can get college credit for classes at Oakland Community School. We had a lot of people coming to the school because it's closer in the community than driving the other 60 blocks down to Laney College. And as well, you had a lot of Vietnam veterans who had been to the war and had a GI Bill. And so at night, they could come to the learning school. We had classes for people to get their GEDs and stuff like that. So it was like an oasis in the community. We had, like I said, Maya Angela was our English teacher. Charles Moffitt, who previously was a band leader and played with Miles Davis, our youth band. So we had highly qualified people at the school. And it wasn't just for Panthers. It was for the community as well.
Okay. I appreciate that. I know in previous conversation before, you were telling me that you was an honor guard for Johnny Jackson, whether George Jackson doing their funerals, right? How did that come about, and what does the legacy of Comrade George mean to you and also mean to the Black Panther Party?
Well, how I became, okay, at that time, I started in the Black Panther Party in East Oakland, right, which was a big office. But when Huey got out of jail in August 1970, the Central Committee, the governing body of the Black Panther Party, transferred me to Central Headquarters, right? And so from Central Headquarters, I was a security person at Central Headquarters as well as a student at Merritt College. And so when Jonathan was, when the Soledad Brothers case first came about, the party took it up and started supporting the Soledad Brothers, right? And so we had relationship with the Soledad Brothers committee. And so when Johnson was killed, the Central Committee, I guess, chose me because I'm a loyal party member and somebody they can trust as to be the honor guard, right? And so that was a big thing for me. But the next year, in 1971, when George Jackson was killed, the Central Committee again chose me to be ahead, be one of the honor guards. And it was from my loyalty to the party. But to party members, George Jackson was the field marshal, right? George Jackson was a heavy brother. George Jackson was the leader of the prison movement to us. He was a spokesperson, right? He stood for prisoners' rights, and he stood on the principles of the Black Panther Party. And so through George Jackson, the party got further involved in the prison movement, right? Even though Huey was in jail, Huey had just got out of jail, and while he was in jail, he met George, not directly, but through association and through other contacts. And so George became the field marshal of the Black Panther Party. He wrote articles for the Black Panther Party newspaper. He gave guidance and education to prisoners across the world, across America. It was through his guidance that prisoners started standing up for their rights. It was through his guidance that the first Black Panther Party office in prison was in San Quentin. San Quentin was the first Black Panther Party office, you know, chapter. Then Angola became the second down in Louisiana with Angola Three Brothers were. And so to us, George Jackson, he represents the prison movement, right? A conscious brother who stood on principles and fought for his rights, you know, and fought for the destruction of the capitalistic world that has their foot on our neck. So he made that plain, and what he stood for was so effective. When he was murdered, when he was shot down, brothers all over the country rebelled. They didn't know George Jackson personally because they were in jail in Attica, in Rahway, and down in Atmore, down in Alabama. They just knew what he stood for. And so they all started rioting. That was a straw that broke the camel's back in 1971. And through George Jackson's death, you had a lot of people coming to consciousness. Ever since he's been dead, the movement for prisoners to be conscious and involved in the struggle has continued. So to me and the other Black Panther Party members, George Jackson is an outstanding representation of a true revolutionary who stood on principle and fought for the rights of human beings.
Yes, sir. I appreciate that. I appreciate that, right? By you being young.
Go ahead. Also, through this connect, through me being a pallbearer, I became closer to the family, right? And so when we started It's About Time in 1996, one of the persons I came across was my partner today. Her name is Gail Shaw. Back in the day when Miss Jackson and Penny Jackson, Miss Jackson is George's mother and Penny is George's sister, they were spokespersons for George and the Soledad Committee. She used to drive them around, right? Because they were from they were from Pasadena. And so she was from Berkeley, and she used to drive them to court and stuff like that. And so when she went back to medical school after her association with the party, she went to UCLA, and which is close to Pasadena. So her and Miss Jackson became even closer. So over the years, when I hooked up with her, we would go and talk with Miss Jackson, hang out with her and stuff like that. And so Miss Jackson gave us Johnson Jackson's piano. Johnson Jackson, a lot of people don't know, was a prodigy. he was like he could have went. Actually, he was supposed to go to Berklee Music School back east, but the winds of the revolution, he got caught up in the struggle and hit freeing his brother, but he never did go to that music school. But during this one time, Miss Jackson was in a fit, and she said she's going to burn the piano. And my partner, she said, no, you're not. And she said, you better get it out of here. And so she hauled that piano from Pasadena, and it's sitting in our living room right to this day. And when Miss Jackson died a couple of years ago, her daughters called my partner Gail down to Pasadena to help her go through family heirlooms and stuff like that and clean up Miss Jackson's house. And when she came back, she brought, they had gave her pictures of George Jackson when he was in high school. His high school pictures, Johnson Jackson, high school pictures, gave us pictures of Johnson and George together in Pasadena before George went off to jail and did all that time. So I got pictures of George Jackson before he became the George Jackson we know, you know. And not too many people have those pictures or have that piano or have that connection, you know. So I have a lot of people, especially a lot of prison brothers who get out of jail, know about that. And, you know, they want, like when Bobby Seale comes to our house, Bobby Seale gets, he jumps on the piano and plays it all the time, you know, because he's a musician. So those are the little added things about George and the Jackson family. So we were real connected with
What I want to ask you is that by you being close to Johnny Jackson's age at that time, did he inspire you or influence you at that time?
Nah. I mean, after he died, he did. I mean, his actions spoke louder than words. but before that, I just treated him like he was another brother. He was another Panther, you know, a comrade brother revolutionary, you know. But it wasn't until the action he took in 1970 when he tried to free political prisoners. That was heavy. That was deep. That was revolutionary action front and center. And I became a Johnson Jackson fan after that, you know. Because he didn't talk the talk. He walked the walk. He put theory into practice.
Can you tell a little bit about the campaign that he's involved with, Bobby Seale? Are you running for mayor?
Excuse me?
I said, can you tell him about the campaign for Bobby Seale? Are you running for mayor that he participated in?
Oh, man, that was one of the best things that ever happened to the party as well as Oakland. Because, you know, prior to that, the party was anti-establishment, anti-politics. I mean, we used to talk bad about black politicians because they were all sellouts, right? But through Huey's analysis that we could gain more traction by exposing the conditions by participating in the system. And what happened was this. A lot of people benefited off the fact that the Black Panther Party was anti-establishment, right? So in 1968, during that election, we ran Eldridge Cleaver for president, Bobby Seale for assembly person, Kathleen Cleaver for assembly person, and we ran Huey Newton, who was locked up in jail for a political seat. Now, as a result, after the election, they come to find out that Huey garnished a lot of votes in this particular area, even though he was locked up and they accused him of shooting his cop. So what happened was a guy named Ron Dellums, who was a city council person in Berklee and a supporter of the Black Panther Party, saw those statistics and said, Huey's locked up, he's not getting out, I'm going to run for it, because he already saw that Huey had a lot of support through that election, and he got elected him through three re-elections, right? So there was a lot of, you know, so there was a background to Bobby running for mayor. So Bobby ran for mayor after he got out of jail in New Haven when he was locked up with Erica Huggins, right? So he came back to California in 1971. The district committee talked about him running for office because Bobby's loved in Oakland. I mean, you know, more people know Bobby than know Huey. I mean, Huey's the leader of the party, but they see Bobby. You know, Huey's in jail. You see him on a poster, but Bobby's the one who's speaking. Bobby's the one who's doing the breakfast program. Bobby's the one who led people to the Sacramento in 1967. So people know and love Bobby Seale till this very day. So when Bobby decided to run for mayor, that changed Oakland. So that way we turned the system and made it work in our desired manner. We started registering people to vote because we found out that nobody was registering black people to vote because they didn't want black people to vote because your vote is tied in with being elected as a juror. A lot of people don't know how you're selected for a jury is your name is selected out a voter registration roll. But if black people are not registered, you have all white juries. Yeah. So we were educating people about that. And also Bobby had his program was ran on how better housing, better education, jobs in the community. And so that would really change. So people really got behind that because they already know the party had all these successful programs, right? And so we were talking about when we gave away those 10,000 free bags of groceries. But not only did we got those 10,000 free bags of groceries, we registered 7,000 people to vote. We did like 8,000 sickle cell anemia tests, you know, with that bag of groceries. So we wanted to change the system, and the way to do that was inject the revolutionary theory into it. Huey used to say, there's nothing revolutionary in and of itself. It's just the intensity and the revolutionary ideas that you apply and put into that situation that make it revolutionary. So we put that revolutionary theory into practice. We started organizing on college campuses. We started going to PTA meetings. All the people that we had organized in the BSUs, they were out in the community registering people to vote, wanting change. Now, even though Bobby did not win that election in 1973, we did get into the runoff with the mayor of Oakland, and we lost that by a small percentage. From that opened the door because people saw how close we got. They said, okay, our group, we're going to support people because the Panthers almost made it happen. So the next election they had in Oakland for mayor, Lionel Wilson, who was a black mayor, he became the first black mayor of Oakland with the help of the Black Panther Party. We helped get him elected. So the party changed the whole dynamics of electoral politics in Oakland. Just right now, this sister who's running for senator for the state of California, her name is Barbara Lee. She used to work out of my campaign office when Bobby Seale ran for mayor of Oakland, you know. And she's in the House of Representatives. She's been a loyal supporter of us ever since she was in college, you know. And every year she does approximation. When Geronimo got out of jail, Geronimo G. Jaga, they had a Geronimo Day in Oakland, and she helped sponsor that. So our activities in politics was something to revolutionize the politics by having candidates who are out to serve the community instead of serving some interest group.
Okay. Conrad. I know earlier you said political education, right? What exactly is political education, and how does one benefit from it, and why
political
is it important?
Education?
Yes.
Well, one, political education helps you understand the bigger world. You know, it opens up the world and it opens up your mind to political situations. Like when I joined the party, I didn't know very much about politics and I didn't know very much about Africa, right? But the party taught me about the liberation struggle that was going on and that they were fighting for the same thing we were fighting for. And through political education, we moved from that singular thing. Malcolm talked about judging people by their deeds and not by their color. And so I learned that through political education, that you judge a person by their activities, by their social practices, and not because they're a certain color, right? And through political education, you can start figuring out situations in your community and come up with solutions for them. Only through reading and talk and group discussions can this be done. And in the Black Panther Party, that was so important. Every Sunday was political education class. Now, if you run across somebody in the community, say if they're a Panther, oh, I was a Panther so-and-so, ask them what they did on Sunday. If they didn't say political education class, they was no Panther. Because political education classes are mandatory. And another way that people say I was a Panther and so forth, ask them what they did on Wednesday. Wednesday is the day the paper, Black Panther Party newspaper, came out. And so Wednesday in the Bay Area, all Panthers came to San Francisco to help put this paper out. We was cranking out 300,000 newspapers, so we needed all the people available to help us get this paper out overnight. Play a very big part in the party because on Sundays we have a group political education class. We have people like Fred Hampton come in, Geronimo come in from L.A., people fly in from all over America just for this political education class. So these people that represent these different chapters and branches, so we can all be on the same level. We be in lockstep together. We're reading the same books. We're discussing the books. We're seeing how these books and their ideology apply to our given situation. Only you can only do that if you have knowledge, you know. So in the Black Panther Party, we used to say information is the raw material for new ideas. Without information, you would have no way to answer people's problems. So when you go door-to-door in the community, a Panther has to be aware. He has to know the answers. When somebody asks him a question, he can't say, I don't know, or let me get back to you. You have to know the answer because we are representing a new style, a new model of a person. We're representing social practice, political consciousness put in social practice. So it's very important to know about the Black Panther Party newspaper. In the party, you had to read the paper before you sold it. You know, so that way people want to ask what's in the paper, you would know that. So the party was a grassroots organization. He had many members who were high school dropouts and so forth. But through political education, they were demanded to read. A lot of people learned how to read because they didn't want to be embarrassed on Sunday in the political education class. Because sometimes you get answers wrong. You might, you know, you're right before your peers, and you don't want to seem like you don't know what's going on. So that was social pressure as well. But political education is the backbone of any organization, you know, because you can only go as fast as the slowest person in your group. So we teach because every person is a teacher as well as a student. This is what we learned. Political education. So we read George Jackson's books. We read many books and applied them to the situation we was dealing with in the community. So to have the deeper your consciousness, the better you can serve the people in the community. You're aware of problems. You can deal with situations before they arise because you read about that in a book that was dealing with revolutionary struggle, you know, like Krumah. Talked about that in his book. He talked about Ghana, you know. Or Lumumba talks about certain things when he was talking about the liberation of the Congo. There's lessons to be learned, and the party was the place you learn those things, because we studied them, you know. Because Mandela said whenever he was in prison and he heard news about the Black Panther Party, he said it made him feel good there and still in the struggle.
So, you know, for the people who are listening, right, and people listening in the future, when exactly did the Black Panther Party start, and when did it cease to exist?
Well, the party started in October, officially October 1966, right? Huey and Bobby were the first two members. Bobby Hutton became the first person to join the Black Panther Party. He was 15 and a half, and the party grew from little Bobby Hutton. Little Bobby Hutton got his two best friends, the Forte brothers, Sherwin and Reggie, and then Big Man, Albert Big Man Howard, came off the campus with Bobby. Him and Bobby were organized on campus. Big Man was a football player for the college, but he had this class with Bobby, and Bobby always was talking about Black history and so forth. So you had Huey, you had little Bobby Hutton, you had Bobby Seale, the Forte brothers, and you had Big Man. And from those six, the Black Panther Party grew into the thousands of people. The Black Panther Party had over 48 chapters and branches. We had support in the UK. There was a group called the Polynesian Panthers, the Aboriginal Panthers. There were support groups all in Sweden as well, because there was Black people who was AWOL from the Vietnam War. And at that time, Sweden was letting soldiers stay in their country without being prosecuted. You had a lot of Black people going to Sweden, right? So the Black Panther Party grew from 1966 to those six guys, from Bobby Seale and Huey Newton, to the six people. Then from that, the Black Panther Party grew to 48 offices. The party lasted until 1980. Now, we closed our doors in 1980 to the central headquarters, but the Oakland Community School stayed open two more years, so it closed in 1982. So we're talking about 13, 14 years of hard activity by dedicated members of the Black Panther Party fighting against the system, who COINTELPRO was in jailing and killing, locking people up. Matter of fact, we still have a few brothers that are still locked up in jail from those times. You know, so the party was around to 1982.
Okay. If people want to know some of these history, or learn this history, where would they go to learn that in regards to your website? What's your website address so you can learn this information?
Our website is www.itsabouttimebpp.com. Now, on this website, we have a lot of information. Now, when you get onto the website, there's a menu to your left. And on that menu, we have different sections on it, like women in the BPP. You know, click on that, you'll find out about women in the party, interviews. Then we have something about social programs, about individuals, student programs. So there's a lot of stuff on our menu, especially audio video. You want to click on that, because I have put 120 different videos on that link. You can go there and see the murder of Fred Hampton. You can go to that link and hear Fred Hampton give four or five different speeches other than the one that you've been hearing. We have pictures of Panthers being interviewed. You see Panthers giving away 10,000 free bags of groceries. There's videos about Asada. There's videos about how the party started. So there's a lot of information on our website, a lot of interviews. There's a link to the Black Panther Party newspaper. There's a link to various social programs of the party. So it's a pretty in-depth website, and I'm very proud of it because there's no other website like it. You know, people who went to college, graduated, and became professors and sent their students to our website, you know? So just last week, we had a student here from Paris, you know? They were studying the Black Panther Party, and she got a grant to come out to California and do research. And the first place she came was to our archive because she had most of the information she learned was from our website. She said she'd been studying our website for 3 years. In 2 weeks, we got a guy coming from a young lady. Her name is Venus. She's coming from Germany, you know, and she's been studying the Black Panther Party's connection with religion, with the church, you know. We didn't always have a good relationship with the church under the leadership of Elder Cleaver because he was anti-religion and anti-church. But we changed that. Ideology, that thinking. Elders used to say stuff like, "Either you're part of the problem or part of the solution." Well, that's a catchy phrase, but at the same time, if you really listen to it, you're alienating half of the community. You know, half the community goes to the church, so you start out alienating 50% of the community. So we changed that perception of the church, because most of our breakfast programs were in churches. And we had a minister that worked closely with us, Father Earl Neal. He ran St. Augustine Church. He started visiting Huey early on when Huey was in the Alameda County Jail. Him and Huey hit it off so well, Huey made him the minister of religion, even though we don't practice religion in the party, right? So the party advanced from that particular stance, either part of the problem or part of the solution, to widening our view through political education, because we learned that churches have always been a place for sanctuary and progressive thinking, you know, because Nat Turner and Gabriel Prosser and people like that were very religious and had churches, right? And most of the Underground Railroad's stations were in churches. So churches played a very progressive part of the liberation struggle, even during the Martin Luther King era, you know, the nonviolent turn-your-cheek era, you know. But we had a revolutionary priest, Father Earl Neal, who at that time ran the church, and that's where we started the free breakfast program. That's where we started our political education classes, because prior to us hooking up with Father Neil, we didn't have a place to be. We didn't have a place to be. So he opened up his church, and every Wednesday, or every Thursday, people that wanted to join the party or attend political education class came to St. Augustine Church. That's where the Panthers were. So if you wanted to join the party, you came to St. Augustine Church on Thursday to the political education class, and then people would tell you what to do after that. You know, so Father Earl Neal right now, even though he started with the party, he moved to South Africa about 15 years ago, and he is Desmond Tutu's assistant in Africa.
Interesting. Could you tell us about the free medical clinic and what happened to it?
Well, you know, the party analyzed that we wasn't getting the proper medical care in our community. And when we went to the hospitals or the emergency rooms, it was a long wait and so forth. So we started our own medical clinic. So the Black Panther Party had 14 different medical facilities across America, where you can walk in, that we didn't ask you how much your family made, you know, for as money-wise. We didn't ask you if your name was the same last name as your father's and all that kind of bureaucratic stuff. If you was alien or sick, came to the clinic and we would treat you. We had by having an institution in the community, doctors and nurses volunteered their time. They put back into the community. You know, Dr. Small became our leading doctor, right? He ran the George Jackson Free Medical Clinic in Berkeley, right? He recruited doctors from Highland Hospital, Merritt Hospital, and places like that because they were progressive people amongst those doctors who wanted to see the community do better. And so we had an institution where people could come and donate. A doctor might donate, you know, 10 hours a week, you know, 3 hours a day or something like that to see patients, right? So we had like 14 different clinics, and today, through Legacy Wire, two of them are still open. One in Seattle, Washington, and the dental clinic, used to be called the Fred Hampton Memorial Dental Clinic, but the county bought the clinic and the building and so forth, and they changed the name, so it's not called Fred Hampton anymore. But we still have two clinics that the party originally functioned and controlled, still serving the community, one in Portland and one in Seattle, you know. And having decent medicine and doctors that really care and love their patients is phenomenal. It's not just going to see a doctor who doesn't know who you are, doesn't really care about you, doesn't want to be there. These doctors volunteer their time. They love the community just like the Panthers do, you know. So there was a way for those people like that to give back to the community. And that was the same thing we urged all the college students to do. You know, say you're going to school 3 or 4 years, you're getting a master's degree or a BA or something like that. Hey, put that knowledge, those skills back in the community, you know. We had teachers who donated their services and worked at the Oakland Community School. We had doctors who donated their services, worked at the clinics. We had people, period, just helped us, you know, develop and grow, you know. So we had young lawyers who went to Bolt Hall, which is part of UC Berkeley. That's a law department. We had students coming right off the campus, and they were coming they were coming to the Panther office on every Tuesday to do lawyer services, right? So if a brother or sister caught a case or they're being evicted or they had some kind of dealing with the law, they didn't think it was right or know what to do, they knew they can come to the Panther office on Tuesday and talk to sometimes a real lawyer, but a student lawyer who kind of know the same thing, and they can refer them or kind of give them an outlook of what to do, you know, because we had a lot of landlords evicting people for no reason and stuff like that, or police just beat and brutalizing people, you know. And it was through the services of the party that we started recruiting a lot of people, because when we was out doing patrols in the community, a lot of times we would tell the brother or sister to take the case. Take the case. Don't resist arrest. Don't give them a reason to beat and brutalize you. And a lot of times we would follow that paddy wagon, like I said, down to the police department and bail those brothers or sisters out. And that way, in the community, that word-of-mouth thing got around. Hey, them Panthers are pretty serious. I went to jail, or my cousin went to jail, and they got him out. They had his back. And word-of-mouth is big in the community, big in the community. So that's how we started getting some of our first recruits, because people saw what we were doing. And while I'm on this subject, in terms of history, history has dissected that law book that the Panthers had out of our hands. All they talk about is the gun. When we patrolled the police, we had a gun and a law book so we could recite the law to the police, because most police at that time still are ignorant people. they're uneducated time. There was no standard of being a police. So if your cousin was a police, he can get you on, you can be a police. Or if you was on a football team, there was no diversity training or anything like that. So people joined the party through our social practice, and the party started to grow because we was putting theory into practice.
Could you tell me the relationship between or the connection with the WIC program and the Black Panther Party? What's the connection for the people who don't know, the people who listen?
Well, the WIC is like the Panther's free food program, you know. The free food program was an institution started by the party. It just like the free breakfast program was started by the party. We embarrassed the government. We embarrassed the government what we were doing. They were saying we were thugs and gangsters and we were no good. But, hey, we were feeding thousands of kids and giving away food. What was the government doing at that time? They were sending rockets to the moon. They were sending monkeys and dogs out into space. You know, and so we use that as a way to criticize the government and say, they don't have your interests at heart. Who lives out in the space? Can you drive your car in space? I mean, how many people live there? You know, so we were able to embarrass the government into starting social programs. And they started the breakfast program because we were feeding all them thousands of kids. They started the WIC program because we were giving away all that free groceries, and they wasn't doing anything, you know. So the party was like the vanguard, leading the way, you know, showing people, instituting programs in the community that related to people, right? So the WIC program, the breakfast program that the kids go to today are all Panther stuff, like. The senior escort service for senior citizens. I don't know of any city in America that don't have provide a van for senior citizens to get around. That started with the Black Panther Party. You know, all these other programs that were started by the party, or the party led the direction. You know, I talked about. The Disability Act of 1977. Now, in most major cities in America, there are ramps for people in wheelchairs. There's Braille on a traffic light, and some of the traffic lights tweet for people who have bad sight or can't see. Or prior to the Disability Act passed, there was no way for a handicapped person in a wheelchair to get to the post office. Because they had stairs. They couldn't even go to court because there were stairs. So the Disability Act changed all that. They had to make ramps and provisions all across America. And a lot of people don't even know the party led that struggle for that to happen. So the basic things that people enjoy today, you look back, the Black Panther Party has had to do with your quality of life that you have today, you know. Students can go to class and choose which class they go to. Back when I was going to school, you couldn't go to certain colleges, no matter if you had the money. they wouldn't let you in. But through ethnic studies, they kicked open the door. So the Black Panther Party was a vanguard for a lot of social programs, as well as the prison movement, you know. People read about George Jackson in the paper. People read about the Soledad Brothers. They read about, and people started organizing and helping people in the community. The Black Panther Party started a commissary program that went across the country. You write the Black Panther Party, we would send you books. We would send you, like, basic stuff like toothpaste. I mean, stuff that you wouldn't get in prison or if you didn't have a family or your family kind of rejected you because you were in jail, the Black Panther Party you can always write us, and we will send you material. We will see, and today, one of the programs that we do have is Books Behind Bars program. There's many brothers I sent books, material to in the last 20 years. Hey, listen, I was in Oakland and at an event during COVID, so my face was masked, right? And so I seen in the distance Frederica Newton, Huey's wife, and Huey, she seen me and took her mask off and said, Billy X, over here. And I took my mask off. I said, okay. And a brother standing right next to me. He said, are you Billy X? I said, yeah. He says, man, I've been wanting to meet you because you've been sending me stuff for the last 5 years. He was in Pelican Bay, you know, locked down in Pelican Bay. And it was through our books, through Books of Prisons program, he was able to keep up what was going on the outside. And he gave me the biggest hug. And since that time, I've been to Oakland. He's bought me lunch and stuff like that, you know. You know, the party has led me in a way that I'm still a member of the Black Panther Party, but there is no Black Panther Party. But the education the party did, I learned from the party. I carry on that legacy.
True indeed. I have one more question, right? I know there's a movie came out in 1995 called Panthers, right? I'm not sure if you've seen it or not, but if you did see it, how accurate is that movie in regards to the history? Might you been a Black Panther historian?
Well, the movie's not a documentary, right? So it has some Hollywoodish things in it to shoot out and stuff like that. But I tell people, to me, it's sufficient. What it pointed out was our social program. What it pointed out was COINTEL and the FBI harassing and killing party members, right? It brought that out. It brought out the social programs and how we got a traffic light installed in the community, you know, all those things. So it was pretty accurate up to a point. But then they had the Hollywood shootout and all the Hollywood kind of stuff like that. But to me, I think it was sufficient. You know, it's hard. I mean, like I said, it's not a documentary. And my role in it was to teach the extras what a Panther was, teach them how to march, teach them how to chant, and tell them the reasons why. So I was kind of like an advisor. And also in the movie, that was by Mario Van Peebles, where Mario's dad had an early association with the Black Panther Party. He did a movie called Sweet Sweetback, in which Huey Newton analyzed it and it made it into a centerfold. It was a centerfold article that he did on the movie, how Sweet Sweetback was a revolutionary movie and gave the reasons why. And told all Black Panther Party members to go check out this movie. Marilyn Van Peebles will tell you his movie was successful because Huey Newton gave that kiss of love to him. Because if it wasn't for the Panthers, his movie was a flop because it was too revolutionary. So there's been a lot of movies, a lot of documentaries. On our website, one of the links you can see are books, some of the books that you can read to find that we endorse. There's been a lot of books coming out in the last 5 years about the legacy of the party. There's been a few movies like the Vanguard documentary by Stanley Nelson and other movies as well. You know, Lords of the Revolution by VH1. That, to me, that's one of the best documentaries they made because they just don't focus on Oakland Panthers. They go to New York and deal with the New York 21, right? And they go to Chicago and deal with Fred Hampton and Bob Rush and the Panthers there and what they were dealing with. So it's a documentary that kind of moves around and shows you how the Panther Party was in certain geographical locations.
Interest. Can you repeat the name of the documentary again?
one? Oh, The Vanguard by Stanley Nelson?
No, not The Vanguard. Not that one. The one you said were real accurate. The best one you like. They talked about the Fountain of Wayne.
It's called The Lords of the Revolution, and it was put out by VH1. It is great. They interview leading members. They interview Emery, Bobby Seale, myself, two or three sisters, a couple other, Emery Douglas as well, you know. So this is a pretty thorough, but Bobby talks about the beginning of the party, you know. And for people, for some of your listeners that really want to know how the party started, read Bobby Seale's book, Seize the Time. Came out in 1969, tells you about who Huey Newton was, how they met, how they got started, some of the problems they had in the very beginning, everything. It's a very good book for those that really don't know about the party.
Okay. Okay. First, I'd like to thank you for coming to our broadcast today, now that we're understanding. Thank you for the work and be the past, present, and the future, right? At this time, I want you to leave with your final thought. What you want to leave it with? You want to leave with contact information? What do you want to quote? Just, you know, what do you want to leave it with?
Yeah, well, people can check out our website. They can check out Bill Jennings on Facebook or It's About Time/BPP on Facebook. I post stuff about every other day. I have rare pictures I put on Facebook. So if you have a chance, check out Bill Jennings or It's About Time/BPP on Facebook. Check out our website, It's About Time BPP.com. And if you have any questions, people can call me from the website. My number's there. They can email me if they have questions about the Black Panther Party. There's a phone number there. They can text me as well.
Okay. Okay. If anyone got any loved one, comrade, suicide, enemy line, please look at Georgia University. Our website is www.georgiauniversity.edu.com. Again, it's www.georgiauniversity.edu.com. Long live the resistance, long live the guerrilla, long live the African independent movement. Peace.
All power to the people.
Yes, sir.
All right, thank you.
You're welcome, good brother.
All right, now I'm gone. All right.
Sir.